Where did I go? I went to Israel and Jordan and saw many things, not only in Israel that I'd never seen before, but I'd never been to Jordan. And so I'll just show you two or just a handful of photos. I see that my album here for my Israel trip is 1822, and that's after deleting a lot. So I spent hours processing all my videos and also slides, and then I reduced it down to 68 that I'm going to share with the rest of the people on a Dropbox basis, and I can just kind of give you an overview of that, of a few highlights on the tour. But it was quite an impressive and a remarkable experience, I have to tell you. So. We went to Jaffa first, and just amazing experiences that we had there. As you can, there's a lot of beauty. We were blessed with wonderful weather. It made a huge difference. We had a large group. It was bigger than we should have had. It was about 51 people. Marianne was with me, and it was a great, great group of folks, though. Got to know people well, and that's really the key in these trips is relationships. Because at the end, the biggest thing you come away with is the relationships. There were a number of the men, for example, in my Wednesday morning study who were going there. I wouldn't even be able to tell you if I saw them on the street who they were before, because it's a big group. It's over 100 men. But now I feel like I'm very close with them, because every night we would hang around and have wine together. After there would be a dinner, then there would be a teaching session. I'd do a speaking at night, and then after that, the later thing, we'd meet and just chat together. And so I became, after two weeks of that every night, you get to know people pretty well, you have to admit. So it was just wonderful experiences and relationships, people from various parts of the country. Just a lot of beauty, as you can see. We're very blessed, as I say, with very good weather and seeing wonderful sights, many of which I'd not seen before. Like this one is a Crusader castle, the Nimrod Fortress, and it's very beautiful. And again, I have photos. I could dig down in every one of these if I wanted to. This is one of my favorite places, which is the Springs of Banyas, they call them. It's Caesarea Philippi, where Jesus spoke with his disciples. But there's this there's an altar to the god of Pan, and these are some of the people who were on the tour with us. I'm seeing them at a distance there. Beautiful area, though. But when Jesus met with his disciples, I assure you, he didn't come to the Temple of Pan. That was a pagan temple, but in the area. Just, again, some beautiful overlooks from that area. And this is a wonderful time I had. I was not planning to do this. It was optional. That you'd go to the top of Mount Arbel and overlook the Sea of Galilee, and you'd have to get up at 4 a.m. to do it, to see the sunrise. And I wasn't planning to do it at all, but I said, well, if the Lord wants me to go, he'll wake me up. He woke me up at 4:10. So I was able to go. So I have a lot of wonderful photos from that too. I could show you, just drill down. Magical times that we enjoyed together. These are some friends of mine who were on that trip, going to the Sea of Galilee, and this was our group heading out to the sea. And there's nothing like the Sea of Galilee, because it really makes it come alive. How many of you have been to Israel, just out of curiosity? A pretty good percentage. Isn't it true, though, that when you go to the Holy Land, words become pictures, and then you really feel a sense, and they can't mess up with the Sea of Galilee. Nazareth, not so great. Sea of Galilee, however, they couldn't mess that up, although I'm surprised they haven't floated a church on there yet. You know, I'm just surprised somebody hasn't come with the idea of having a floating church to kind of do the deal. There's so much commercialism and so forth. I mean, there's money to be made. Let me see, get the next one here. There. And this is an image of the Sea of Galilee from Capernaum. And again, just beautiful weather, beautiful time together, and so many extraordinary experiences we enjoyed. We were, by the way, kicked out of the King David Hotel. We were supposed to be there for 7 nights. That's Israel's best hotel. And we were set up for that, and then Trump with his entourage bumped us so that we only were there 3 nights. We had to lose the last 4 nights, which was a bummer, because we had to move to Tel Aviv. And so it added 3 hours every day just to get there and come back and all that because of the traffic. And we were at the Dan Tel Aviv, and I'm telling you, it's not the King David. And so, but nevertheless, we were very good troopers. No one was whining or complaining and so forth. It was actually very good. And it did give us the opportunity just to see special sites, including Caesarea Philippi. This is not that. This is Beit She'an. This is a Roman city that was in the time of Christ. And some have speculated, would Jesus have gone to that city? There are theaters, there are things that are interesting. It's very, very complete. And it's a speculative kind of a thing, but his knowledge of Roman culture was very impressive. Megiddo here. And this was Mount Tabor. I'd never been there before, but there's a Franciscan church on the top. That's their traditional site for the Transfiguration. We don't really know which high mountain he went to, but it was a beautiful garden, and just it was actually quite a surprising experience. What I didn't think would be a great time, and turned out to be really a wonderful time. This is a particularly interesting site here. I don't have time to go into it and show you other pictures, but I am pretty convinced this was at Mount, when we went to Ebal, and this is something almost no one goes, but they had discovered in 1980 what appears to be an altar that was built there on Mount Ebal. And if you recall the scriptures' description of how Joshua, once he would take the leadership, once they crossed the Jordan River, they were to build this altar of uncut stones there, and then to have sacrifice there and dedicate it to the Lord. That's where the blessings and cursings would be. Mount Gilboa would be the blessings, Mount Ebal, the cursings. Interestingly enough, they built the altar where the cursings would be because God knew that they would in fact disobey, and that the altar is like a sacrifice showing that God's grace and mercy would still his covenant love would not be violated by their sin. But I really think this was the place. There's no, unusual in Israel. There's no excavations, there's no previous habitation, nothing subsequent to that. This thing was completely pristine. In fact, when I'm walking on there after they've done this excavation, you can still see pottery shards all over the place on the ground. It's just pristine, and we had to be escorted by the Israeli military to get to this site because it's in the West Bank, and so as a consequence, we needed to do that. But I have to say, it was well worth our time. And if that really is Joshua's altar, and they've done enough evidence to show that the bones that they were using were only animals that were kosher animals that would be used and so forth. Very interesting stuff. So that to me was a big eye-opener and a remarkable experience. This is Shechem. They seem to pronounce it Chem like that. Alfred, isn't that close? Pretty close, yeah. They have a guttural sound, Chem. It's Shechem, and important things are found there. This is the King David. This is our first night when we went there, and then, of course, we knew we wouldn't enjoy that after, but we made the most of our time together. Wonderful friendships. We went to this interesting dig that they're actually excavating part of the temple, just south on the area south of the Temple Mount. And this excavation, they actually allow people to come and they give you the sample, the soil that comes from there, and then your job is to sift through this, and then they have experts once you've figured it out who will then check. So it really is part of an excavation. We found some very interesting thing. I found various bones and potsherds and a pottery and other kinds of things. We didn't see any coins or anything like that, but it was a very interesting experience as well. We did this wonderful city walk around the ramparts, and that was enjoyable as well. This Hakanera tree, just a beautiful, images there. This is at the Cardo. The Cardo is, the word Cardo means heart, and it's the Romans would typically, Vitruvius was the architect who would often just divide a city into a Cardo, and one direction, Main Street. And that's where we got, I think, I'm just guessing, the heart of the city. the cardo is the heart, and then the opposite street, the vertical street, would be called the deca manos, and it would mean the 10 fingers. This is the heart and the hands, and they divide the city this way. And the cardo was found. We were at here is an image from Qumran. And I am really convinced that if that discovery had been found much before 1947, it would have not been available. I think they would have just totally messed it up. Only Israel preserved the Qumran scrolls, you see, and it came out just in time where they were able to. Because remember, a Bedouin shepherd threw a stone into one of the caves there, and you remember he heard some shattering sound, and that was led to the discovery. If it had been like 1942 or whatever, who knows what would have became of that extraordinary discovery, which, as you know, moved the text of the Hebrew Bible back over a thousand years, because our earliest manuscript, the Leningrad Codex, is about just its late 10th century AD. That's very late. And this pushes us now back to the time around Christ's time and even a little bit before. And the incredible finding that the Dead Sea Scroll, for example, the one of Isaiah, the great Isaiah scroll, which is displayed a facsimile in the shrine of the book, is virtually identical to the Masoretic text, this Masoretic community that faithfully would copy the text with great care and effort. The only differences were a matter of minor spelling errors. It was just spelling changes, very remarkable. And so it really had a profound impact on a lot of reasons for the text itself. Here's an image, as you can see, from the Masada, and you can see the Salt Sea there in the distance, and then we're up there having a lecture, and I like this image here. You can see them walking around on Masada, and that was an extraordinary experience for us. I love the Olivet, the area on the Mount Olives. We don't know exactly where he was in the garden. But these are very old olive trees. They don't go back to that time, but some of them are 1,000 years old. And it's a beautiful garden. Very beautiful. You see the hollyhocks there. This is Caesarea Maritima. It means this is the Caesarea on the coast. And this we were privileged to see. The one advantage we got from being bumped from the hotel was that we were able to go back because we were in Caesarea, Tel Aviv. We weren't far from here, so we spent a whole day. And those who wanted to go in the regular tour went on that, and the bulk of us went on this tour. And I was impressed with how much they've greatly improved it, including, you can see the Hippodrome, which is where Ben-Hur's chariot races took place and so forth. And I found out, among other things, that the most expensive seats when you would be attending were on the two ends. Why would that be? What do you guess? More crashes, more people killed. Just the same with, it's just like NASCAR and people like that. They watch it not to see them go around, but to see, and then to, ain't it awful? So this is the part of that hippodrome, the chariot race, the area where they actually would have raced the chariots, just a group of us by that area there. They go to my Wednesday morning study, and I've gotten to know them much better. Here, one day I had my lunch was just it's gelato, and I just, Glenn Havens, whom you all know, of course, was with us, and my friend Joe Kimmel, wonderful. He had his 75th birthday on the tour, and a great experience. Let's see if I can get this good away here. Temple Mount. I was astonished at the Temple Mount because of it was the first time I'd done the actual entire perimeter. And I have to tell you, there were some shocking messes there where the Palestinians just left this rubble it's just a mess up there. And it really bothered me. I was thinking about Moshe Dayan and about how, because we were there then on the 50th anniversary of their taking of Jerusalem in 1967. And we were fortunate to be able to go to the Western Wall. There was a huge, huge ceremony. We'd never been, but we got there just after it was over, and we were able to do that. And then go to the extension of the Western Wall, almost a mile long underground, which was impressive. But I got to rethinking about the Moshe Dayan situation. It sounded like he was snatching defeat out of the jaws of victory by letting the Palestinian Authority take over the Temple Mount. His statement, I didn't know this before, he says, we don't want any Vatican up there. In other words, we don't want a temple. But I believe that they had, in fact, allowed, if the Jews had done this, they might have been trying to too prematurely bring about events that I believe are being postponed in God's timing, because timing is everything in the purposes of God. So the timing will be revealed. Actually, the Jewish guy that we had, he cannot go up on that, beyond those steps. Because for the Jews, it's still a sacred place, you see, where the temple was. So they will not go there. There was, by the way, some talk of even tearing down the Dome of the Rock in 67. It was interesting stuff, so it would have been pretty radical. Again, this is from the City of David. Now, I'd never been there, but there was an excavation of the City of David, the ancient city, which is south of the Temple Mount. And I was most impressed because they've actually found a palace that I think is really David's palace. And so they're excavating that right now. Many wonderful things to see outside the old city here. Our group is at, this is our group at the at Gordon's Calvary, you know, the garden tomb, which is much more attractive and so forth. The location of the tomb, whether you plump for the Holy Sepulchre or this, isn't the issue. I think the Holy Sepulchre is more likely, but that being the case, it was very beautiful. And this is the tomb. Again, if you haven't seen that, this was an ancient tomb. And we each got a chance to look in there. We had a little communion service there as well. And this is at the Western Wall. So we were able to go to the Western Wall. My friend Ray Logan is praying there. And so it was wonderful. And then, as I said, going underneath. So the Western Wall outside continues. It was basically an external wall. It was not part of the temple. Just as Jesus predicted, not one stone will be standing upon another. And indeed, all the stones were torn apart, partly because it caught on fire and the Romans wanted to get the gold, and so they fulfilled Jesus' words inadvertently. But this outward wall was still there, and it goes so far, and we were able to go along that, and that was new for me as well. So this is that stone I was telling you about, this massive, this is a portion of this this stone. It's absolutely astonishing what they were able to achieve. We went into this the Land of the Bible Museum, which is part associated with the Israel Museum, and it was a very wonderful overview. Gave you a great overview, and these crazy gods. You got to wonder what people were thinking. These nutty beings that they would serve with these goofy faces and so. But anyway, but it's just amazing. But our gods are more subtle. We still worship our deities. I'm sorry to say, but they're the wrong ones. Again, if it's not the living God. Let me see where I was here. Yes. So, and then this, then I went to, we went to Jordan. So 23 of us went on to Jordan, the rest went back. And this was all new to me, and going to Mount Nebo was an impressive thing to see the sights of what Moses would have seen prior to his death. And you remember he was given and granted a vision of the land all the way to the sea, and that's impossible from where you were. You can go pretty far. Here's the Salt Sea here, but you cannot possibly see the entire land from here. It was a miraculous vision that God gave Moses prior to his death. Remember his body was buried there? And it's quite intriguing that it was important that God's the one who buried the body. Now, I discovered something when I was there, and it's kind of changing my view a little bit about the Ark of the Covenant, which I previously thought would have been put and hidden in the Temple Mount underneath. But I'm beginning to think otherwise. One of the apocryphal books, two of them, 1st and 2nd Maccabees. You've heard of 1st Maccabees. It's the book we primarily use to get the history of Judas Maccabeus and the time of Antiochus Epiphanes, the man who set up that false, desecrated the temple. Remember, it was kind of like a preliminary of the man of sin. But 2 Maccabees, which isn't relied on as much as first, but still, I didn't see any reason not to believe that what the text says. 2 Maccabees chapter 2 tells us that Jeremiah would in fact was warned by God to tell the people to bring the Ark of the Covenant and the altar of burnt incense and the tabernacle, which, as you know, existed at that time. They, even though the temple had been built, they didn't throw those things away, and they were part of that. They were, before the Babylonians would come and conquer, they removed it to and take it to the mountain where Moses was buried, Mount Nebo. And according to the text, 2 Maccabees 2, you can look it up, these three things were buried there in a cave, and then the cave was sealed off, but the location was lost. And when Jeremiah heard about the location being lost, he then made this prophecy saying that this will not be divulged until the Jews are regathered and the end of the times, where God will then grace them and they will build their temple. I thought that was fascinating to me. So it may well be that I was real near where that ark is going to be found. I changed my view of that a little bit. This is an image there the Franciscans have of the serpent on the pole. Remember that idea there? And this, we went to Madaba, and they have this extraordinary mosaic map from the 7th century of Israel and the environs, a very important map. And I had seen and read about it before, and I got the privilege of actually seeing this map, which is, again, you can see the mosaics, the stones, and a very impressive map. Here's another part of it here, all related to Israel at that time. And then we went to the Wadi Rum. And the Wadi Rum is where parts of Lawrence of Arabia was filmed, and also The Martian was filmed there. And so we had this, you can see the red sand there, you see? And it was really an extraordinary time as we were clambering up this red sand, just in time for the sunset. And that was pure magic, I have to tell you, that was a magical, so we're, as you can you get your perspective of how this place was. We went there on these Toyota pickup trucks, and really, what a ride. This is the sunset about to take place, and we're just reveling together and sharing, being immersed in beauty and sharing beauty together. It was one of those magical things you could not plan. It was really quite an extraordinary experience. Then we went the next day to Petra, and it was much more impressive than I ever imagined. You always only see the treasury, that's that facade there, but it's much more than that. This is an image that you see before, well before you get there, and the Nabataeans, who were apparently Bedouins, but then somehow built this place out of sandstone and limestone. It's astonishing what they achieved. And then you're walking through, and you go almost a mile and a half before you get to the temple, to the treasury, through these crevices like this, you see, and going through there. And this, I believe, is probably Basra. And Basra is the place where Micah 2 tells us that people of Israel, that the Israelites will be protected in the last days. And Revelation 12, if you want to read it, tells us that they will be persecuted, and in the second half of the tribulation, for 1260 days, they'll be protected and preserved by God, who will care for them. This is in Edom. So when we first went over to Jordan, we were in the northern part, which was Moab, and then you work your way down to Edom. And this is where, in the wilderness, this is where they were wandering. This is where they had the manna. And I was wondering if it would be possible for God to preserve them here. And as I saw more about this, and you see this narrow opening that leads into this area here, extraordinary, is it not? Again, limestone and sandstone. And then you see all these carvings and tremendous amount of work that was done. Very beautiful. And then suddenly it opens up to this. And this is this famous thing that's called the treasury. And just carved out of one solid rock, you see. And we weren't able to go inside. They're doing some excavations there. But beyond the treasury, it continues. It goes on and on. Another half mile and a half we went, but it's even bigger than that. So we did not take the camel ride, but they have all these tombs and so forth. And here's, for example, a stadium, a theater. So they actually had, so it was built by these Nabataeans, then the Romans took over, and then the Greco-Roman influence, and then after that there was the influence of the Byzantine, and then a church was built there in the Byzantine era, and then later the Islamic, and then after that the Crusaders, all these, then it was lost for over 500 years. No one knew where it was. This remarkable place was lost, and it was not discovered until one man who heard about it pretended that he was, in fact, a local, and that he wanted just to find out where it was. He'd learned the language, and so he heard about this, and they showed him this place, and lo and behold, this magical place, enormous, was there, 1812. It was hidden for about over 500 years, and then comes to light. And then they started to do photographs in 1819. This continued. You can see the Roman colonnades and so forth here. Again, a very beautiful place, much bigger than what you normally see. It just goes on. And when I went there and I realized, you know, this is big enough. This is a place, and it's huge. It's bigger than I am even showing you. It'd be big enough for the Jews who come to faith in Messiah and who are persecuted in the wilderness to live in tents and be provided for by God with the water and the manna, but or however he chooses to do that. That was a bit of an epiphany for me as well. We are now on Eilat, and this water, this really is the color of the water. And that's the color. It's like cerulean blue. It's just beautiful. And we had a lovely time there. And finally we went through the Negev desert, you see. And then this is the Ramon crater. I mean, they call it a crater. It's not really a crater, but it's this massive. Well, I wouldn't be surprised when we go back in 5 years and you see the Negev desert. I wouldn't be surprised if they begin to pipe in water from the Mediterranean Sea, because they now have the world's most advanced desalinization process. And if they pumped that in there, they could make this whole thing come alive. It was impressive, because the first time I was in Israel, which was in 1978, I remember driving from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and it seemed rather desolate, rather barren. You go there now, it's filled with hundreds of thousands of trees, all that have come up since then. It just gets more and more beautiful, what they have accomplished. The size of New Jersey, the state of Israel, second only to the United States in high-tech startup companies, most impressive, surrounded by hundreds of millions of enemies, yet God's providing for them. The first time in human history that an ancient language is basically revived and now is spoken. And an ancient people back in their land, and it just goes on and on. Even now, with this small percentage, maybe 12, 13 million Jews, they still win every year 25 to 30% of the Nobel Prizes. That's 1,700 times more than they should be. So you have to figure God's got his hands on these people. And though they have regathered in disbelief, ultimately, we know what's going to happen, that the tribulation, the 7 years of tribulation, especially the last half, will be designed not only to judge the nations, but secondly, to bring Israel to the Lord. Until they cry out what we know they're going to say in Isaiah 53. The blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. I will not come until you say that. And so when at the end of that time, he will then come. So for me, it was kind of an eye-opener just to see the magisterial nature of prophecy. And not just that, the land itself, the relationships, the beauty, the history, all these things locked into space-time history. See, our faith is embedded in that, isn't it? It's not just something long ago and far away. We don't know where, but it's a nice story. This is embedded. It's locked into history. It's the historicity of the resurrected Christ, the Old Testament prophecies concerning the Messiah and his fulfillment of the ones relating to the first advent, and on it goes. We're immersed in history, and the archaeology, the evidence, the excavations all continue to actually bear witness to the truths of what we're embracing. So for me, it was an extraordinary experience. So any questions before I move into our teaching? I didn't mean to talk that long. Good grief. Gosh, this, yeah.
Was there any
the Wadi Rum, which is really near, it was on our way from Moab, and so now you're in Edom. And so you're in that. So clearly they went through the Wadi Rum and the wilderness, and God was, when you go through that, you realize it had to be divine sustenance, the water and the manna and the quail, because there's no way 2.5 million people are going to survive going through that. But that's where they were. So other than that, that they went through there, we know that. And Sihon and Og, they the two kings that they killed in that time, the Amorites and all that. We knew that they went through that in order to go north to Moab in order, and before the then Moses would die. So that would be the connection there. Yes. Yes. At Ben Gurion. Yeah.
They would plant seeds of small cumin.
Yes.
And during the daytime, the sun would be very hot, and there would lay these cubes that would be a gelatinous material in the ground. And in the daytime, the sun would create moisture, condensation. At night, it would get very cold. So you would get condensation. And the roots would grow down through the cubing and the plant itself. And they created all sorts of
irrigation. It was very impressive with the Nabataeans. Yeah, they're mysterious. We don't know much about them, but they know that they were somehow related to the Bedouins, but this is more than a Bedouin tribe, obviously, what they were able to achieve. But you're quite right. And then they actually had the waterways that would go through there from the spring that would feed it. Very sophisticated. It was a trade center at one time, a very sophisticated place. And you're right about the irrigation and the planting techniques. Another thing that Israel cleverly used was eucalyptus trees because they can deal with the salt, and that became a way of dealing with it and getting rid of the swamps and so forth, and amazing stuff. So at the end of the day, it was really, though, as I have to say, it was always about relationships, really, when you think about it. Looking back, sharing God's truth, and looking back and building memories that will last forever is always, I think, a wonderful theme to have. Gosh, it's so late, I'm wondering about teaching. Yes. Not a lot is known. Some suggested that it had gone back to the 6th century B.C., but surely it flourished from the 2nd century B.C. to the 2nd century A.D. The Romans took it over around 100 A.D., and then they added and modified and so forth. But it was a really very unique, one-off, mysterious civilization that seems to be not a whole lot of knowledge about it. But I could go into that if you wanted. I have a little. I went to this little museum that, after being there, which was interesting, and kind of explained a lot of this. But there's a lot of mysteries about who they were and what they were about. That's quite intriguing to me. But it does appear because ordinary Bedouins wouldn't do this. But they could. It was sandstone and limestone. By the way, the sandstone's important for the water because it would absorb this, and so trees and so forth would grow there, which was quite impressive what you could do there. Let me just see. Let me just go back to this here. See if I can find this one thing here. I'll be lucky if I can with 1,800 photos here. I'm trying to see. Where am I here? I may not be able to find it. Some really interesting bits here. This is, if I happen to catch it, I don't know if I'll be able to find it. So it's kind of a, either you do or you don't. And it looks like I'm in the don't side of things, at any rate. Because these were the gods of the Nabataeans here. I won't worry about it though, because I have a description. One more, I can send you more information about that. But there's really a lot of mystery, a lot of questions, and about how these kings and so forth, and how they led it and organized it. Very mysterious. I do think, and I had a strong impression, this is the place. This is the most logical place, and it is associated with Bozrah, B-O-Z-R-A-H, as I mentioned, and I think it's the same place. So for me, being near where I think the ark would be and seeing where the people will be preserved was kind of an exciting thing, seeing the Temple Mount again and so forth, and it was a remarkable experience all the way around. I'm giving up on the teaching because, so I have 3 minutes before we have to quit.
Actually,
the iPhone is amazing because you can get some amazing shots, 12 megapixels. So if I zoom down here, for example, and I'll give an example of this. This, you see, look at this. That's good detail. Would you not agree? That's pretty impressive. So it's amazing stuff. So we had one bus. Yeah, happily, but it was again larger than I wanted it to be. You see, and I learned a lot about the future. If I ever do them again. Here's the Arbel again, and when we saw the sun rising there, and I have some videos of that as well. Kind of magical time to see the sun rising over the Sea of Galilee, and just amazing experiences that we shared together. What I should have done is I should have used more of the panorama. You know, the panoramic is one of the techniques you use in the iPhone, and I forgot to use that because you can get some long photos. But it turned out very well in the whole. Any last thoughts as I'm looking for? When am I going to do this again? This is me and Chuck Sugar, and this is the one of the people. So we've done our work. You see, we did our work, and we put these things in those trays. So one's for bones, one's for there's 6 categories. Then she inspects it to make sure it's right. We got really good at this. I wish we had had like a half a day doing it. We got really like a team, the two of us, and it was really really a great deal of fun. It's very meaningful to share these things together with people, though. Yeah, just extraordinary experiences all around. And I took lots of photos there at Christ Church there in Jerusalem there. So, and a number of us enjoyed. This is just one last thing here, if I can find it. Oh, yeah, yeah. So this is the 4 of us outside of Christ Church having the best chai latte I've ever had. It takes it a while. You see, watch what it'll do in just a moment. Right now it's fuzzy because it's downloading it. And once it downloads, you'll see it where. You see what happened? All of a sudden it was detailed. So we were just having an extraordinary time. We couldn't get into Christ Church because there were 51 of us, and so it was so packed that we were the last ones to get in, so we couldn't go inside. So the 4 of us did our own little deal at the beauty of Christ Church and the environs, like this cherry that came from this cherry tree up here. You can see the cherries there, you see? And the guy had just picked one. He just went up there and took it. And then we just studying God's world and his astonishment together. It was one of the best worship services I'd ever had. It was an extraordinary time. So,
do you have a picture of the grapevine?
Of the
grapevine that Christ
took. Oh, that Alfred took down? Oh, it grew back up?
Yeah, it's in the garden in the back.
Oh, yeah, we found the garden in the back. Let me see. Because we discovered that garden in the back. Let me just see if I can find it. This is a lemon tree in the back, and so maybe this may be it. This is the back garden here.
Right, well, it's the arbola to the right. You'll see a great arbola.
Uh huh. Anyway, yeah.
This is if you look right there, you wouldn't notice it, but if you look at the kind of baby tree, it's right behind.
Behind that. Okay.
That's great. And that's an arbola.
Okay.
Kind of all the way down, like down.
Well, I have to say, it's a treasure. I didn't even know that back garden existed. What a beautiful place for it. Because you don't see it because you have to go down this alley. It's a kind of narrow thing, and then you discover it was there. Well, we're out of time, I'm sorry to say. But, I'm sorry to bore you with my tour thing. Next week, we'll go back into the teaching on holistic spirituality. You had a question? Okay. Please do. Yeah, that's it. That's amazing. Which part? It's over in this area? Yeah. It's so beautiful, the garden, though, back there. And I never knew it existed. And this lemon tree and all these other things, wonderful. Well, let me just close this then in a prayer, and we'll pick up next time. And we'll actually do a teaching. Lord, we thank you for this time together, and I pray that you would give us the wisdom of enhancing relationships, sharing experiences together, serving one another, loving one another, and praying for each other. We pray in Christ's name. Amen.